out. Would you read the 15th verse of Helaman 6? Now, what the next year? Read the next verse. See if things are getting better.
And then it commenced on the 16th and 7th year, people began to grow exceedingly wicked again.
Why? You read the next verse, that'll tell you why.
For behold, the Lord had blessed them along with the rest of the worlds, that they had not been stirred up to anger from wars or bloodshed. Therefore, they began to set their heart upon their riches. Yea, they began to seek to get gain that they might be lifted up one above another. Therefore they began to commit secret murders and to rob and to plunder that they might get gain.
That's funny, they were getting rich, so they didn't need any wars anymore. They were rather happy about it. With riches of the word, they hadn't been stirred up to bloodshed nationally. So they get rich and then they stirred up to private bloodshed. Their wars are lowered to a private level now. Now they're going to start doing that sort of thing, and then we get our prime time, as I mentioned before, secret murders to rob murder that they might get gain. Now these two, Kishkumen and Gadian, put their heads together and formed a gang. These gangs, we noticed, are very enduring, called Gadianton's robbers. And when the Lamanites found out there were robbers among them, they were exceedingly sorrowful. But how did the Nephites react, Brother Barrows? Was it Brother Barrows?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. It was indeed. Brother Baudet. Brother Baudet here. Or Brother Keeney.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Europe right now. He's in Europe right now for medical treatment.
Oh, well, thanks for telling me. Mm-hmm. And Brother Brink. Brother Brink could tell us the next one. And Brother Bryson. Brother Bryson, this 21st verse has a lot of dynamite in it. Would you read it to us? Since I can't.
The 21st verse?
Yeah, the 21st verse.
But behold, Satan did stir up the hearts of the more part of the Nephites, insomuch that they did unite with the robbers, did enter into their covenants and their oaths, that they would protect and preserve one another in whatsoever difficult circumstances they should be placed, but they should not suffer.
So they got protection, didn't they? And they were all getting in it. They're all going to profit on it. It tells us a lot about this now. What happens to the mutual trust and so forth that you have? I noticed this week that, just day before yesterday, notice that they may murder and steal and commit whoredoms and all manner of wickedness, but they have these oaths among themselves so that they might distinguish a brother in the covenant. But do you think those would hold up very well, if that's the kind of people they are? Well, it was just a report that in Nidal's gang, very secret, their secret assassination gang, as you know, they're terrorists. Within the last week, 150 members of the Nidal gang have been murdered by other members of the gang. That's how they trust each other, you see. Well, if that keeps up, we'll all be very happy. But they are the untouchables, you know, contrary to the laws of the country and also to the laws of God. They... And they were tried. Now they have their special courts of their own. And this is characteristic of all your brotherhoods. They are going to have that. And that is Sean Brown here? Sean Brown's body's not here. Bryson? Bryson's always been here. Oh, that was you, wasn't it? Boy, am I sharp as a doorknob today. Sister Burton. Brother Bus, he's always been here. What's wrong here? Well, he's sick too, I guess. And Cheadle, and Crane, excuse me. Is there a Crane here? Are you Brother Crane?
No,
you're Brother Cheadle. All right, we'll take it up with you and Brother Cheadle here. Now look, they have their own laws and their own governments. It's a state within a state. In this 24th verse, are there such institutions in the world today? What's the one that immediately comes to mind now?
The Medellin.
It just runs itself. It has their own laws. It has their own policemen. It has their own army. Their own everything. They even have their own public works and things like that. And charities and the like. Yes, the laws of their country, but according to the laws of their wickedness, which have been given by the Gadianton and Kishkumen. And so we have these independent, the states within a state. Bill Moyer, I didn't listen to it, but Bill Moyer recently ran a series on that, the state within the state. And so we have things like the Demolay and so forth. Just for the fun of it, just from the last 2 days, this is from the paper, this is not everything here, but this is the sort of thing we run into. Well, the first one I find rather, oh, this came back in. And the third, this is how this just got in here. But it amuses me because the president says that, President Lee, ethical conduct is essential to a person's financial success. Over the long run, ethical conduct pays off. But if you're in insurance or in real estate or in the law, it's the short run that pays off. Remember, American stockyard, as against the Japanese, American stock market is aimed entirely at short gain, quick short gains. That's where these big fortunes are being made. But anyway, he goes on and says, in the long run, ethical conduct pays off in dollars and cents. But if being honest meant financial ruin, would you still be honest then? Well, of course you'd have to be. That's why be honest, to be honest. And that's happened, that's very often happened. That a person has suffered financial ruin because he wouldn't collect on a certain thing or wouldn't crack down. On the other hand, there are situations in which being honest will make less money than in the wrong run. Having a big Bill Hanley and so forth. No, that's a strange thing. Remember, Plato says the honest man is the man who will do right even with the ring of Gyges. Gyges was one of the tyrants, and he had this ring. If you wore it, it made you visible, invisible. Now, if you had the ring of Gyges, you could do anything you want to because you'd be invisible. That shouldn't change your behavior at all. You do the right thing because it was the right thing, not because it will make you money, bring you financial success, or in the long run, dollars and cents. That's positively cynical, if you ask me. He's not as bad as Wilkinson, though. Oh, Wilkinson had some jillies. Well, here's another one. Exxon quits Wildlife Board. Well, Exxon were great exponents of wildlife and so forth until they had to pay a lot of money, so they're not going to pay the money, so they quit the board. Rockefeller Mitsubishi deal. Said it was with Japanese taxpayer subsidy. Yeah. Wall Street Journal. This is what happens. Mitsubishi, one of the biggest companies in the world, the Rockefellers, one of the richest families in the world, made a deal in which they're both made exceedingly rich. Neither has to pay anything. They're enriched by the taxpayers of Japan and the United States, respectively, because of this deal they made. We won't go into it, but that's the way it works. Huge government subsidy, courtesy of the tax code. The Rockefellers structured the deal. Mitsubishi now inherits this debt, but it passes its tax problem onto the Japanese government. So everybody paid off and everybody's happy. That's the deal we work in today. I don't know about that. This is an interesting thing. A drug war screens fascist takeover bill. Now, the perennial struggle has always been between, of course, the landowners, the rich landowners, and the people who want the land. That's way back, Mexican Revolution, everything else. And it's still going on. It says that is the real thing. The drugs is only a temporary screen for that sort of thing. Well, anyway, that one says so. This is an interesting thing. It says Reagan busy hoping for certain financial security, says he feels financially insecure. And it lists his sources of income, which are quite fabulous. But still it says he feels insecure because the money isn't coming enough in for the Reagan Library, isn't coming in fast enough. But for himself, well, he'll get his bread and milk, I think. Actually, scouring the earth, destroying the earth, everybody's blaming everybody else now. They're aware of it now. Then the downwinders blast for end safety. The terrible things that happened there, all the cases of cancer and so forth in Nevada and southern Utah. a case where they're not responsible for what happens, this is the way it goes, then maybe there's somebody hot ones here. Angry judge fines Boeing $5.5 million. Boeing pleaded guilty to two felony counts. Of course, it's just a week's earnings for them, so they can afford to have done it. Pleads guilty Monday to two felony counts. The point is, this infests every level, you see. Here is one of the biggest supports for our military and for our commercial airlines and so forth, and yet they've been cutting corners and doing all sorts of wicked things like this. And we're fined more than $5.5 million. A federal judge who was angered at corporate offer, at no Boeing corporate offer appeared in court, officer appeared in court. They had contempt. They're such a powerful company, they don't have to appear in court if they don't want to. That made the judge mad. Well, this is an interesting thing, because we just read here, they did according to their own minds and wills to be tried, not according to the laws of their country, but according to their own laws. And we find out cases just after this where they refused to appear. Well, the chairman of Boeing's board write him a letter personally expressing the company's criminal contrition in the case. I haven't written the letter yet. Richard L. Fowler, senior marketing analyst for Boeing Aerospace, was indicted on 39 counts of conspiracy and fraud involving secret Pentagon documents. This has to do with the National Defense, which they're the sacred defenders of. They all wrap themselves in the flag and say they're making this country strong and free and so forth. That's what the suppliers tell us. The plea bargain involved two felonies. Why Boeing had no corporate officer present in the courtroom, they don't know. Boeing's lawyer admitted, he says, this is a very sad day in its history. The Boeing lawyer also admitted, there is no question Boeing should not have had those documents. They were doing wrong. Well. Here's what's happening this week. This was just yesterday. In Lima, the suspected Maoist guerrillas killed six people Monday, apparently as a reprisal for voting in Peru's municipal election. The guerrillas walked up to three men, one of them a poll watcher in the election. This is the way the Gadiantans operate, you see. Poll watcher in the elections, and as they played soccer and shot them to death, the police said. Three other men were shot dead on the outskirts of Ayacucho, the police said. We presume the murders were reprisals for participating in the elections. That was their crime. They voted in the elections. At least six people, including a family of three, died in the Shining Path attacks on election day, the poverty-stricken Andes. The bloodiest instance, a group of peasants stepped on a guerrilla mine on a road as the peasants walked home to their village after voting in the city of Concepcion, killing all three members. And the Shining Path takes credit for this. Now, this is the sort of thing we read about in the Book of Mormon. It's the same country, the same sort of thing going on, a standing tradition. It's amazing how little things change here. Here's a new one that just came out. It was on Sunday. A man's city dating back to 600 B.C., a very interesting thing. These cities don't change very much. They're yet to be excavated. It had towers up to 150 feet high, even in their crumbled state. Excuse me. Yet to be excavated. And it goes back, it's built over an older village back to 1000 B.C. Remember the former inhabitants of the land and so forth. And it's an interesting thing, it says, it includes that crew of about, that comes from Los Angeles, UP, about 60, which includes scientists from UCLA, Brigham Young University, University of San Carlos. So BYU is in on the deal, and that's a good thing. These things may develop. They're beginning to look more and more alike. Now, here's our national treasures and so forth. Here is a French fort that goes back to the French and Indian Wars. It's older than the Republic. It's on the Mississippi. A fort of very great value and interest. Now it's been converted into a hazardous waste dump. And businesses is booming for gun manufacturers. Well, we know that, of course, it is. Here's lowdown on high tech. Some gadgets have gadgets. There's a very important gadget that's been selling very widely in the market, and they just discovered it has a very serious glitch in it. Your machine will go out all the time if you use it, and this is what they say about it. Intel is the one that makes it. Certainly Intel is not the only company that has ever had a bug in its product, just one of those that for whatever reason has admitted it. This kind of stuff crops up all the time in software as well as hardware, and more complex computers and programs get, the tougher it is to test them adequately, and the greater chance a substantial error will show up. What really galled me about this particular instance, though, is that the Intel continued to make the bad part, even as it worked on a fixed version. Hardware companies such as AST, they continued to buy it, too, see. AST Research, apparently, more concerned about staking out an early market position than about needs of their customers, vowed to continue buying the bad parts and using them, incorporating them into computer systems. To their credit, some of them, IBM refused to do that. Is it too much to expect companies to stop buying something they know is flawed because it can do great damage? You see, a false calculation can throw everything off. You know it's flawed and reselling it to public? Do companies believe that the world is so desperate for another new MIPS of flawed computer power this month won't wait for corrected machines next year? That may be fine for big corporations that can afford the luxury of experiment with the latest equipment or absorb the cost of any problems that arise when the technology doesn't work as expected, but for the individuals, the people who get the machines, the effects are disastrous. Well, comics here. The burr trail and the pressure. It seems that they've discovered there's been all sorts of underground pressure. Well, the BLM is notoriously corrupt. That's been because there are big funds there. Oh, here now, in Colombia, in Bogota, they decided to have the army join in the fight against drugs. And it was a disastrous thing to do because now the armies are all participating in the army. The police should have done it, it says. They're infinitely less than the army had. It really mistake to place the army in Colombia in contact with the narcotics criminals who have an immense capacity to corrupt, you see. So they've corrupted the army now. Despite the arrest of about 11,000 suspects, the seizure of more than 1,000 properties, no drug lords have yet been captured. Gomez Mendez said the military command was aware that the drug lords had infiltrated and corrupted the army officers. Well, see, this is the situation you're getting in the Book of Mormon. And here is the morality of it. Here's this fellow, Neuhart, who got the U.S. News going. He says he wrote a book called The Memoirs of an SOB, name of the book. And he says, to me, an SOB is someone who uses whatever tactics it takes to get the job done, to rise to the top. And in truth, I think that more CEOs or bosses would use my tactics in some degree than will admit it. In his book, Neuhart does not paint a pretty picture of the business world. Driven by an insatiable hunger for power, he manipulates, we're right back in the Book of Mormon, see. He manipulates friends, ignores his wife and children, torments his rivals, and generally stops at nothing to reach his goal. Along the way, he drives hard-working employees into the ground and angers fellow executives with his bullying tactics. And his wife writes about him, his divorced wife. You can imagine how that's going to be. He says, Al Neuhart is a snake. Lori Wilson, his wife, writes. She was a former Florida state senator. The world is Al's prey. He's a stalking animal. Once you're his target, professionally or personally, he'll do whatever it takes to get you. You might as well roll over and play dead. Well, these are the morality. But ask why she would help her ex-husband promote the book. She doesn't bat an eye, the same one answers, well, of course, I'm hoping he'll remember me in his will. She'll get some money out of it. These are pleasant people, aren't they? And of course, Utah always is right there on top. Only helps the tiniest of tiny Tims. We consistently cut our assistance to the poor. Which the Book of Mormon has a lot to say, of course. And this is amusing. For years and years, they've been dropping bombs all over the place outside of the range, it said. Navy pilots accidentally dropped hundreds of bombs for years outside a military bombing range in central Nevada. Here you go over to Fallon there. They fly over, drop one on you, keep your hat on. State officials are angry. They were never told about it. Thousands of bombs jeopardizing life and limb being dropped. Never a hint about it. The Navy has recovered up to 2,000 live and dead bombs dropped outside the 22,000-acre tract there. He called it a string of broken promises from the governor. Says it's just one of in a long string of broken promises from the Navy. We used to think we could turn to military forces for integrity, but remember, you win battles and wars by strategy, and strategy is deception. You get what you want by fooling the enemy. Strategy is to tell and give him the wrong idea as to your place, your position, your potentialities, your capacities, your supplies, your routes, everything. You try to fool him in everything. So if you look in the dictionary, it says strategy is deception practiced on an enemy. The only thing is, who's the enemy? Well, as the Roman army soon discovered, the enemy is anybody you don't like. The enemy is anyone that won't pay you enough. And they'd say more than half the emperors were bumped off by the army. And so we have it here. Operation Ugly Baby is a routine exercise to ensure people's safety. The public wasn't informed of the effort to... you always find these lame excuses. The public wasn't informed of the effort to keep away onlookers, he said. We don't want onlookers there. Well, this is a sweet one here. Springville boy hurt in gun mishap. A Springville boy was checking a shotgun before going pheasant hunting when the gun discharged into his shoulder. Kevin L. Peterson, 31, was at his home the weekend getting ready to go pheasant hunting with his friends. Now, how many presidents of the church, at least four presidents of the church, have declared that hunting, especially hunting birds for pleasure, is abominable, an abomination in the sight of the Lord? The president tells us what we want to hear. He's the prophet, the prophet. We don't want to hear. Who's he? Yes, that sort of thing. Oh, here's a nice list. Here's a nice list of things going on. From Ivan Boyce, you all know about these. From Ivan Boyce to Mike Milken. Skander had many major players. First, Boyce. He paid $100 million in fines and restitution and agreed to plead guilty on one count. Got out. Then he's found working with him as Michael R. Milken, 43. Schemed with Boyce. $200 million mark for junk. He created a $200 billion market for junk bonds. And he pleaded innocent and plans a court fight. Then Dennis Levine, 36. There is some... Shakespeare gives us a good picture of Shylock, who was a great soul but also was a scoundrel. And these people are all Jews. I don't sound anti-Semitic since I'm Jewish, partly, but you notice that pretty shrewd. Dennis Levine, 36, was paroled in September after serving 17 months. Securities, fraud, tax evasion, and perjury. A broad inside trading ring. He'd organized this ring. There's your secret combination and so forth. He told a group of business students this year he has formed a merger as an acquisition consulting firm. And I'm sorry I broke the law, he says, but he's going on with it. Then comes Martin Siegel, who's 40. He's guilty for illegal stock trading. He was with Peabody and Company. He agreed to return $9 million in legal dealings with Boyce. They're all connected with Drexel, incidentally, the high respectable Drexel. Then there's Boyd L. Jeffries, 58. 2 years of helping the government. He was fined $250,000 after 2 years of helping the government because he was an informer. A stock concealment scheme with Boyce. He was in him for 5 years, but plans eventually returned. You know, Boyce went around giving talks last year to, this was 83, wasn't it? Several years ago, to high schools, and the subject was, it's good to have a healthy greed. He described this as healthy greed. Well, Boyd Jeffries, stock concealment scheme, he got 5 years. Well, Paul Bilzerian, 39, well, he is an Armenian. And there's always a saying, it takes five Jews to cheat one Armenian. They're the slyest of all. 4 years in prison, 9 counts of securities, fraud, and conspiracy. Continues to deny the charge. Stephen Wang, Jr., the sly Oriental there. He's only 25 years old. The former Morgan Stanley and Company junior analyst allegedly made $200,000 from a multimillion-dollar insider training scheme. Robert Freeman goes on and on. The most dramatic of them all is this one. He agreed to plead guilty to one felony count and was awaiting sentence. Bruce Lee Newberg, 32, Princeton Newport Partners, very, very respectable. Newberg told an executive in the investment firm after a shady deal, "Welcome to the world of being a sleaze," he says. That's what they call it. R. Foster Wynans, 41, former Wall Street Journal reporter. Tips from, he wrote this, heard on the street, and he'd use his tips to wrote Insider Trading. Then Lisa Jones, 26, former Drexel assistant, lying to federal grand jury, doing a government investigation. Well, you know, all these big names. These are the people that have been pushing the stock markets ahead. And here we have the U.S. House panel. Here's the testimony of downsiders and what people do here. These pictures, they all have leukemia and so forth, and the lung cancer and the like. Joe, who speaks Navajo and whose testimony was read for him by Billy, said miners had to work in the dust and smoke without any protective clothing, face mask, or respirator. We ate our lunch in the mines. We drank water from the homemade water fountains in the mines. By the end of the day, we were sent home very sick. This went on year after year. That's nothing to the mines of Scotland, though, where my grandparents toiled away. I'll read you something from them one day. And then, of course, childish play has become absolutely devastating. This Devil's Night, they just burned down houses now. And so it goes. We have a happy picture here. So let's get on here with this sort of thing and see how it develops. And this now works is where it comes from, the laws of their country. These secret oaths and covenants, now this is the one that we come to now. These secret oaths and covenants, which Alma commanded his son, should not go forth unto the world, lest they should be a means of bringing down people unto destruction. There are things that have been held back and never told us, because they could do great damage if we knew them. It's a very interesting thing. When I was training at Camp Ritchie, this very, very secret underground thing, there was a great talk about a new technique that was devastating. It should never be allowed to get out. It's a means of assassination. It was very, very, very secret. And if it ever got out, the world would be destroyed properly. And all it was judo. But in those days, it was kung fu. Kung fu. And that sort of thing, which you see on the TV all the time now. But in those days, it was unknown. It was a carefully guarded secret. It's a government secret, these various ways of doing this thing. So I had the class in that and felt very powerful. So this now it's going to take us back to one source, though. These things all follow a pattern. They all something or other. Excuse me. Do we need Satan to help us do these things? Would we do them without Satan? Now, there are parts of the Book of Mormon where people are not influenced by Satan at all. And there are societies where people are not. You don't have to be. But it is something that comes in from outside. It is something that grasps your mind. It's not just more than power, gain, and ambition, the basic wishes of human beings, to assert yourself. As I say, the dogs start fighting, and then the whole pound breaks into pandemonium if the cattle keeper isn't there. And we will go into these things just of our own without Satan's assistance at all. These things come if it wasn't for the Lord. We have to interfere with them. That's why Jesus Christ is so important, because there's no other pin. There's nothing else. Nobody has an inkling of an idea what else could be done about this. This just goes on forever and ever. Without Jesus Christ, you're not going to get out of it at all. So he says, I didn't keep the records. He put it in the heart of the Gadians was that same being. Notice he's going to say the same being five times now. Same being, next verse, same being, next verse, 28th verse, same being, and again, same being, 29th verse, same being. He keeps emphasizing he wants us to know that there is a being. That's the way he describes it now, how he looks or something. But there is that being. There is something at the core and center of things. There is a control here. There's something working in that direction. Could be like an abstract principle, you know. That same being who enticed our first parents to partake of the forbidden fruit. The same being who would plot with Cain that if he would murder his brother Abel, it should not be known unto the world. And he did plot with Cain. And of course that story is told us in the Book of Moses, how Cain manages those things. And well, the best thing we should consider this, because this takes it back to its source here, shows us how it operated here. In the beginning, remember, Moses comes down, he's in the image of the only begotten, and Satan wants to run the thing. You notice the first chapter of Moses, the 19th verse, says, Satan cried with a loud voice and rent upon the earth, commanded him, saying, I am the only begotten Son. Worry me, worship me. Now, it's an interesting thing that he never commands Adam to do anything wrong. He commands him to sacrifice, commands Cain to sacrifice him to the Lord, to take oaths of by the Most High God, the Creator, and so forth. What's he doing here? When he tells Adam and Eve to partake of the fruit, the same thing that had been done in other worlds, what's wrong with that, he says. The thing is that he wants them to be taking orders from him. That's the whole thing. He wants us to be saved, but he wants to be the author of salvation. Maybe he says that right at the beginning, the third chapter of Abraham. In the beginning, he came before the Lord, give me thy glory, and I will see to it that they all get saved. I'll get the glory, and I'll get the credit, and I'll get them all saved. That was his plan. He wanted to save them, not to damn them. And so they don't take oaths by devils or anything. They take oaths by their Creator and God and tell it mouth and so forth. So here he goes, and he wants to run the whole show. That's it, the only begotten. And Moses was intimidated. He began to fear. He saw the bitterness of hell, and he called upon God and then could denounce Satan and tell him to depart. And Satan cried with a loud voice, with weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and he departed from hence, that he, Moses, beheld him not. But he's going to come back again, you see. So here he works on Adam, first of all. As you know, he doesn't sell Adam on it at all. You go on to the sixth chapter here. And then, more to this than you think here. Yes. And Satan, in the fourth chapter, we have the account of the council in heaven, which is well documented in early Christian and Jewish sources. They skip it because it isn't part of their theology, but it's there, believe me. Satan rebelled against me and sought to destroy the agency of man. See, his agency was going to be Satan's agency. He laid down the rules. He'd tell them what to do, and that's what dictatorial, autocratic states do. Which I, the Lord God, had given him also, that I would give him mine own power. By the power of mine only begotten, I caused that he should be cast down, and he became Satan. Shaitan, that means the one who lies in ambush, who deceives by the great liar. See, he loves them, who loves them makes a lie. Remember the various titles that go in. The word that's called him, Master Mahad, message, it means the hater. He's the great hater. He's the aspirer. Remember, he aspires, he contends, uses violence, and he does the things that he became the devil, the father of all lies. This is the method he works, to deceive, you see. Strategy. He's deceiving is his method. See, so there's only one crime after all. We have the word tells you what I think is going on. The easiest thing in the world, I can fool you, see. I can tell you what I don't think and make you think it and put on the air of great sincerity and so. And it becomes a fine Jesuitical art. To deceive and to bind them to his will. And notice this, even as many as would not hearken unto my voice. If you do not live up to every commandment, you will be in my power, Satan says. And he's right. The Lord had provided that. That if you don't hearken unto my voice, the Lord says, you will be subject to his will. That's what he wanted, you see. And Satan put it into the heart of the serpent. And this is what happened, said. And then the sad thing happened. Adam and Eve received the gospel in the fifth chapter here. They see it in its fullness and absolutely glory in it. But then what happens? And Adam and Eve blessed the name of God and made all things known unto their sons and daughters. And Satan came among them, saying, I am also a son of God, and commanded them, saying, believe it not. See, there is the straight denial, you see. And they went for it. They all believed in him. And they believed it not, and they loved Satan more than God. And man began from that time forth to be carnal and sensual and devilish. We're not born carnal, sensual, and devilish. It's from that time forth that we're yielding to the temptations of Satan, because that's not our nature at all, coming from the other world. See, that's the Calvinism, the doctrine of Calvinism. St. Augustine says, a massa perditionis. Man is a mass of perdition, and utterly corrupt. Or, as the Calvinists put it, total depravity. We are by nature totally depraved. Well, we're not totally depraved. It was from that time forth that man began to be carnal and sensual and devilish. Well, Adam and Eve ceased not to call upon God and did everything they could, but all they could do was mourn before the Lord. They couldn't. Cain hearkened not and said, who's the Lord that I should know him? Now, Cain has his own plan, you see. Cain loved Satan more than God, and Satan commanded him, saying, make an offering unto the Lord. Notice he said, an offering unto the Lord. We're in the fifth chapter of the book of Moses, if any of you have your book of Moses, in the 18th verse. He didn't say, make an offering unto me. He didn't say, make an offering unto the devils or to idols. He said, make an offering unto the Lord. And in the process of time, Cain brought the offering unto the Lord. And Abel also brought his first, the first things of his flock and the fat thereof. But unto Cain, he had not respect. Now Satan knew he wouldn't have respect. Why? He couldn't have respect. Satan had already, Cain had already denounced him. He said Cain loved Satan more than God, and Satan commanded, and he obeyed Satan. See, Satan has what he wants. He's taking orders from me. He's offering to the Lord. That's good, but he's offering on my instructions. I'm the leader here. And so Abel also brought the fatlings of his flock. And the Lord said unto Cain, the offerings he had not respect. Satan knew that that's exactly what would happen, because he couldn't accept an offering. He'd already denounced him. Cain had already denounced the Lord. And it pleased him, and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. The Lord asked him, why art thou constant wroth? And then the Lord very kindly protests and explains with him. And look what happens. If thou dost well, thou shalt be accepted. If thou dost not well, sin lieth at the door, and Satan desireth to have thee. That's what he desired. And except thou shalt hearken unto my commandments, there it is again. All who do not live up to the commandments will be in his power. He says it here. Except you hearken unto my commandments, I will give thee up, and it shall be unto thee according to his desire. He shall have power over you. And thou shalt rule over him. Now that's a very important thing, thou shalt rule over him. We won't take that up now. So this is what happened. And what happens? The Lord is protesting. He's going to teach Satan, going to teach Cain the right way. But look what happens here in the 25th verse. These abominations are had from Cain, for he rejected the greater counsel which was from God. And this is a cursing which I will put upon thee, except thou repent. He said, you can always repent, but there is a cursing on you, except you repent. And what is reaction to that? The 26th verse. And Cain was wroth, hot as a firecracker, and listened not any more to the voice of the Lord, neither to Abel his brother, who walked. He turned on his heel and walked out. He turned his back on God and walked out. Wasn't going to have any more discussion with him. So he brings it all on himself, doesn't he? And he goes out and starts to work at things. Now we know people, we can understand his psychology there. You get miffed, you get puffed, you make yourself worse and worse, and dig yourself in deeper and deeper, become very dangerous. And notice, what can poor Adam do? Adam and his wife mourned before the Lord because of Cain and his brethren, because he had his following. He had his brotherhood here. No. Here now, in the 29th verse, they're starting to take their oaths and covenants, which are the same as those of the temple. Therefore, he says, we mustn't let Adam find out about this, because he will know what it is. Satan said unto Cain, swear unto me by thy throat, and if thou wilt tell me, thou shalt die, and swear thy brethren, and by the living God. See, they're swearing by the living God, that they tell it not, for if they tell it, they shall die. And this, that thy father may not know it. Adam must not know about this. He would immediately denounce and discredit it as phony, you see, because that's what it was. But Adam must not know about this. They're establishing this as the real rights, you see, in the world. Cain said, truly I am man, the master of this great... All these things were done in secret. I am master of this great secret, that I may murder and yet gain. Wherefore Cain was called Master Man, and he gloried in his wickedness. Well, as we know, he killed his brother by conspiracy, formed an organization, we learned in the Doctrine and Covenants. And then when he killed Cain, he gloried in what he'd done. He was not ashamed. Why? Because he says, now I'm rich, and rich will make me free. He says, he gloried in what he... I am rich, surely his flocks falleth into my hands. I'll get his flocks, Lord, and I'm rich, and that's the thing. Then the Lord said, where is Abel? So he becomes a fugitive and a beggar, fugitive and a vagabond in the earth, he goes to the land of Nod. Now, Nod, the same as our word Nod. When you nod, you go back and forth. You wander. You don't have any center. So the land of Nod is of Nud is the land of the migrants, is the land of the everlasting wandering. And they are there. Under, that's the curse that Cain is under and so forth. But this thing is right at the center. We go very deeply into these things. And this is a very interesting thing. Lamech becomes Satan's successor here. Lamech does. And he holds the office of Master Machan after Satan. And somebody breaks the oath of secrecy and he murders him. Lamech does. And then he is put out. He is betrayed by his two wives. And then it said, the Lord cursed Lamech and his house and all them that had covenanted with Satan, for they kept not the commandments of God, and it displeased God, and he ministered not unto them, and their works were abominations, and began to spread among all the children of men. Now, whenever you go down, if you read something like the Golden Bough or something, comparative religions, you'll find that throughout all the earth you have these religions. I would recommend a very good treatment on it. Marie Renault, for example, The King Must Die, looks like this. The old matriarchy, the fight between the matriarchy and the patriarchy, and the rites, the wild, obscene rites and so forth that go with it. These are the things that spread through all the earth. That's why you find them through all the earth. This is your world religion. And world religion is down as well. I've written a lot about that. We would not follow it that. But the point is, there's more to this Cain thing than you think, I mean, and more to Satan, too. So, by that same being who enticed our first parents, that is Satan, to take of the forbidden, the same being who plotted with Cain, see, that he'd make him rich if he'd murdered his brother. That's why he did it. He murdered his brother, we're told, to get gain. Should be known unto the world. And notice, and this is the great secret, a master man, that I convert life into property. And that's the way you can do it, of course. All these things I've been reading here, they all jeopardize life. They all destroy some of the qualities of life. They all distract from life. They're all, you might say, anti-life, but they get gain. The only way you can get money is to convert living things. And so the earth is being made desolate in our time, made absolutely desolate in an astonishing manner. That's an interesting thing. I want to show you something here. Well, let's see now. The same person who built a tower, you see, that was Nimrod, who was the descendant of Cush, who was the descendant of Noah, and who built the tower from which the Jaredites came. And the same being who led the people on who came from the tower, who spread the works of darkness and abominations in this land, and dragged the people down to an entire destruction, like the Sierra Leone. The same being, there it is again, put in the hearts of Gadian to carry on the works of darkness. And he has brought it forth from the beginning of man even down to this time. So it's already been there. So we have, this is our anatomy of crime. This is our theory of crime. There's always been a center. There's always been a headquarters. He is the author of all sin. That's a very interesting. It has nothing to do with nationality or anything like that. So you don't have to be a communist to break the Ten Commandments, you know. People can do that. He doth hand down their plots and their oaths and their covenants and their plans. Notice again, they're a brotherhood, they're a society, close society. They're plots, and they have oaths, and they have covenants, and they have plans. We think they'd be rid of that. The word in these modern, sophisticated, scientific times, you wouldn't go back all to this crazy mystique, but everybody's in it up to their ears now. And now it had got great hold on the hearts of the Nephites, and the more part of them did build up unto themselves idols of their gold and their silver. Not gold and silver idols, but they made idols of their money, of their gold and silver. They worshiped that. Suddenly, you see, this bursts on us like a clap of thunder, like a shocking expose. Things we hadn't expected. It's a report to a grand jury that's come out. So circumstantial, so clear, so detailed here. Who could have worked it out then? Now, here's an interesting thing. I just have time for it. And all this happened so fast in the space of not many years. And that's another thing. It works very fast, doesn't it? We've seen that. Noriega used to be on our side. Well, there you are. In the space of not many years, insomuch that the more part of them, in 60 and 70 year of the judges, and they did grow in their iniquities. And the Nephites began to dwindle in unbelief and wickedness, while the Lamanites began to grow exceedingly in the knowledge of their God, turning the tables. The Spirit of the Lord began to withdraw from the Lamanites because of wickedness and the hardness of their hearts. A hard-hearted one that is set and decided and can't be moved. See, that was Cain. He was hard. He wouldn't listen to the Lord. Nothing could move him. He just walked out. The Spirit of the Lord began to withdraw from them, you see, and to pour out his Spirit on the Lamanites, on the other hand. And it came to pass that the Lamanites did hunt. Now, this is too fantastic, you might say. Did hunt the band of robbers of Gadian, those vicious people, and they did preach the word of God among the more wicked of them. This is the Lamanites preaching. Insomuch that this band of robbers was utterly destroyed from among the Lamanites. Just by preaching the gospel to them, it utterly destroyed them. What kind of funny changes can come here? What strange changes? Saturday night, I had a call from a church office in Salt Lake. Very strange. Man started talking to me in Russian, and he was from the Leningrad Institute, and he's suddenly all excited about Mormonism, but he'd never heard of the Book of Mormon. Imagine that, you see. But yet suddenly he should start getting interested in Mormonism. Such strange turnabouts can happen, you know. Sounds absolutely weird. What would he care about it, being a professor at the Leningrad Institute? Well, he said his business was to teach religion there, and the one religion that attracted him most was Mormonism, though he knew very little about it. He'd never seen the Book of Mormon. Obviously, the Book of Mormon was meant for us, certainly up to this point. These things apply to us. These don't apply to those naughty Russians. They have their sins, their wickedness, and so forth. But there are some things we must pay attention to, because this is certainly meant to us. This comes to you, O you Gentiles. And so we have that interesting thing. He's going to send me, he's written, he says, a 40-page a resume of why Mormonism is superior to other religions. Now, this is a Russian professor in Leningrad, who, a total atheist, so forth and so on. Why he would say such a thing is an astonishing thing. No, those things happen, though. And so they preached the gospel, so they weren't such bad guys after all, like the good band, and so forth. Were the Gadianton so bad? Ammon was right. Remember, Ammon went out to speak to the worst and most vicious of people. They told him, you see, you won't last for 5 minutes. You'll be a snowball in hell. He went out, and those were the very people he preached to, and they became the most righteous people in the land. They became more righteous than the Lamanites, the one that Ammon went out to preach to. So we have strange shifts and tides and winds going on now. We're living in a tumultuous time, in case you don't know it.